Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus. With customizable tools and charts you can access across all your devices. Try our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/trader plus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen up, Friar faithful. 97.3 The Fan's Padres Roundtable is on the air.
Unbelievable!
It's time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. The 97.3 The Fan crew is here for the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, delivered by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. And now, here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Well, welcome back to the roundtable. It's been a couple of weeks. We've been the opposite of the Padres, who've been playing virtually every day in June. We've taken almost every day off of the roundtable in June, but we are back here for the next hour, commercial free, to talk about your San Diego Padres with our cast of characters here from 97.3 The Fan. Matt Scraby. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Stephen Woods.
Hi, Ben.
Paul Reindl, the EP. Brayden Soprenant.
What's up, Ben?
Chris Ello.
Hey.
And yours truly, Ben Higgins. And I will get started with that stretch, which I think we all made a lot of as the Padres headed into 26 games in 27 days before the month of June even started. And they finished it yesterday with a win going 13-13. I will start right next to me with Chris Ello. Chris, what, if anything, did we learn about the Padres over these last 26 games?
I didn't think they did very well. Like during this last stretch of games, I thought they've been, you know, playing well below what they're capable. The bats have been silent for far too long. The bullpen has not been as locked down as it had been earlier. The starting pitching is injured and a mess. And yet, 13-13, I think based on everything I just said, is very acceptable. So I think what we learned is that this team does seem to have a little something extra. Whatever that might be, it's hard to define, but it's something that is allowing them to be, you know, right in the middle of things, despite a lot of things not really going the way they would like them to. So I think that's a good sign, hopefully, for the second half.
Yeah, Brayden, do you share that optimism of what the last 26 games means for the Padres?
Yeah, and I broke that stretch a little bit tighter with just the good teams that they had to play. Factor out the Pirates and the Nationals, which ended up making it an even 13-13. I think they're only one game under 500 during the other part of that stretch against very good teams in Major League Baseball. And as Chris mentioned, they haven't been playing very well in any sort of facet. And there's been, you know, when two parts of the game are bad, the other one tries to pick it up. But as Chris mentioned, they could be losing all these games. But the fact that they went 500, I think, suffices. You're going to have another big stretch in August against a lot of good teams. But when you go through the MLB season, you got to weather the storms of these big stretches, and the Padres successfully did that.
You know, Matt, some of the things that we saw in this stretch, the Padres had their worst run in close games all season, but then they came back and won a couple of one-run games. But virtually every game of these last 26, other than maybe the Dodgers 11-1 win or whatever it was, they've all been close. I mean, the Padres continue to play these close games constantly throughout the season.
They do, and I think it's a good thing because it keeps them fresh, it keeps them ready, it keeps them, you know, on their toes, and it also proves to all of us that they can come back and win these games when they, you know, we've seen it. The 13-13 over the last 26 games, I think, is more than acceptable because of how everything's going with the rotation, how everything's going with the bullpen. Mike Schilt, you know, there's a couple times when we disagreed with his bullpen moves, but for the most part, he's done a pretty good job of scheduling this out and making sure that guys aren't really too tired when they come in the game. Maybe Jeremiah Estrada has run into that, Jason Adam, but who else did they have? So they kind of had to use him. I do think that this team knows how to win, and I think that Mike Schilt has put them in that place.
Paul, I think one thing that if we didn't already know that we have learned without a doubt, though, over the last 26 games, that the Padres do not have enough depth on their roster. You take away one player from the lineup, whether it's Jackson Merrill on a concussion or Xander Bogaerts resting a shoulder or just giving a guy a day off of his feet, and all of a sudden, half the lineup looks completely unproductive at the bottom of the order most days. We've talked about, obviously, they need to address that, but it's almost a miracle that they made it through this stretch with a couple of injuries, as Chris said, at 13-13, maybe better than we could have even expected or hoped for.
Yeah, it's crazy how it works out. I mean, Xander Bogaerts getting a lot of criticism during his time with the Padres, rightly so. Finally starts turning it around, gets one day off, and all of a sudden we're like, this is a whole new lineup. Like, what is happening? What's going on? Yeah, the depth, they got to figure it out because, you know, one guy getting a day off or one guy getting hurt shouldn't, like, derail the entire lineup. And you got to find a way to get a spark in this offense. I think when you look at the 26-27 stretch that we're talking about right now, I agree with Chris, I think, the most. Like, it's a results-based business, and the results are they weathered the storm. They got through it 13-13, but it wasn't pretty. And there's a lot of concerns with the offense still. Now, ultimately, a win is a win is a win, and we don't complain about wins, but it hasn't looked very good, and I would like to see some spark in the offense for sure moving forward.
Woods, I gave you about 5 minutes to get your head right at the start of the show, but now it's on you. Did you learn anything over these last 4 weeks?
I learned that we as radio hosts like to move the goalposts a lot, and I think we need to stop doing that. I think, you know, when we went into the stretch, we said 500 would be great throughout this trek that they're about to embark on. Guess what they ended up at? 500. So, mission accomplished. You know, we all know what the other teams that we were playing, we know what they're capable of. This team is pretty resilient. That's the word that I use to describe them. Aesthetically, it's one of the worst things you can watch sometimes. I mean, it really is. But there is something there. And with the right pieces added, with a few things breaking their way, yeah, man, I think, you know, Chris talked about the bullpen, and yeah, bullpens are very volatile. But, you know, I said it this morning on our show, it's the only part of this team that is championship caliber. The only part. Like, the starting pitching's not. The offense certainly isn't. The defense isn't, really. But the bullpen is championship caliber. If we went into the World Series with that bullpen, I think we could get the job done.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And all right, that's six people who follow this team very closely, who all seem to agree that 13-13 was acceptable during that run. However, for a lot of fans, or maybe it's just the loudest fans, the team just isn't playing well enough. And Chris, Matt, I was listening to you guys after the win on the series finale over the Nationals.
I went a little nutty.
Well, you know, just kind of railing at at the overreactions we feel like we hear sometimes, that, you know, every time they lose, the season is over, this team is trash. But I also wanted to also be fair that I don't want to always think that things are okay. I thought in 2023 that everything was going to be fine.
Me too.
All year long. And then I don't even know at what point I realized I was wrong all year long about this team.
It was the point right before they started winning. At the end, when it didn't matter. That was the point where you realize, oh, these games don't really matter.
So you signed Profar for that last month of the year.
Yeah.
So given that we've gone through this before and that they're okay right now, Matt, what are signs that would truly make you concerned? What are you looking for that would justify sometimes the panic we hear in the voices of Padres fans or on social media channels in San Diego?
If they didn't hit or pitch well for like 7-8 games in a row, people are like, one game is everything to some fans out there. And I'm tired of the Diaz. This guy needs to be DFA'd. This guy needs to be DFA'd. I mean, this team, and I was thinking about this the other day. People say, oh, they don't look like they care. Their body language is bad. Fernando gets hit on the wrist by a pitch last Thursday against the Dodgers, back in the lineup the next day. That tells me that he cares. So if we start seeing guys kind of be lackadaisical, if we start seeing more errors, If we start seeing them not take advantage of the small things, like moving from second to third on a fly ball, then that's when I start getting worried.
But they didn't hit for a really concerningly long stretch, especially, you know, late May, early June. I mean, it was bad for a while. The pitching, though, has held up, Chris. You were pretty fired up as well, you know, on your show about the overreaction maybe to the game on Monday in which C.J. Abrams and James Wood went off. Padres came back and won two close games. If they had lost one of those, though, it doesn't fundamentally change who the team is either way. What do you feel like would be a truly concerning development for the Padres?
Well, the first thing I want to say is they've done a good job of winning games that keep us feeling okay. and what I mean,
it's like golf.
A little bit. Like you hit tad shots, but you get that one that brings you back.
That's right.
The Padres, I believe the official record is 17-9. I looked this up in the final game of series this year, which means that at the end of every series, we feel a little better than maybe we could have because they end it with a win.
Love the back nine.
You know, they got the last game against the Dodgers, so losing 3 out of 4 didn't sting as much. We blew the game in Arizona, but we won the last game on Sunday, so it wasn't as painful. We got the 2 at the end against Washington. So I want to say that ahead of time. I think we feel a little bit better than perhaps we should, because I do think underneath there are some signs that could turn this thing the wrong way. And I think if you said, where would I be worried? One more injury somewhere, I think. And if it's a bullpen piece, we can't lose another starting pitcher. And you just talked about what happens if somebody goes out in a lineup. We can't withstand that. That's when I would really get worried.
Woods, you were kind of nodding there. They have won those games. Seemingly, every time we say, boy, they kind of really need to have this one, they have gotten it for the most part this season, which is a good sign. But it also may, as Chris said, mask some of the realities that we don't want to think about.
Well, my concern would ping into the red if Yu Darvish and Michael King don't come back. That's when I'm really concerned. And that's when I'm of the opinion that I could completely move my own goalpost, which I just said not to do, and look at retooling for next year, you know, trying to see what you can get. If Michael King and Yu Darvish don't come back, you don't have what it takes to trade for two guys of that caliber or potential. And so that's when I would be really, really concerned about this team. Now, hopefully we have some clarity on both of those guys in the next couple of weeks. And if that clarity isn't good, if it's murky, I think we're screwed.
Does the fact that AJ hasn't made a move yet, some crazy, you know, May or Panic June move. Blockbuster trade, that would tell me he goes, okay, these guys are not coming back. I'm going to try to save the season. The fact that he hasn't made a move, does that say, all right, he's confident that these two will come back and he can maybe look at addressing other areas of need?
I will.
That's a good point, actually.
I will admit, and you know, I've been saying what Wood said about Michael King, you can't really expect much if he doesn't come back. And tell me if you guys have felt this way. I've kind of held my breath about Stephen Kolek and Ryan Burgert waiting for the inevitable. All right, they're really rookies. They're going to struggle at some point. And I just keep feeling if they can just last until they get Darvish and King back, same, everything is going to be fine. But, Braden, they could not last. We already seen an injury now to Burgert. We're not sure how they're going to. We'll talk about that in a second, what they're going to do with that. But the pitching depth on the starting side definitely feels like the most dicey part of this team to me.
It's definitely dicey, especially with King. I agree with Woods and disagree with Woods. If Darvish doesn't come back, I'm not as concerned. If Michael King does not come back, they're in some serious trouble in terms of the outlook of the season.
I mean, I kind of use them as like a like together, you know,
yeah,
like
together.
I feel like we need them both, right, because somebody can come back and then you don't not worried about a Kolek.
Yes, Joe Musgrove said he might be able to pitch in October.
In October, we just got to get there. We got to get there.
With like with the thing with like you, I mean, I think, you know, even though it's frustrating to watch some of these guys pitch again, you really only need like 3 starters, really, you know, 4 max in the playoffs to get the job done. If you get King back with Cease and Pivetta, you know, you're good enough to win in the postseason when you have a good bullpen. And I think the Padres' bullpen is good. It's funny. I said this on air a couple days ago. I was talking to a Dodgers fan. He absolutely cannot stand Yuki Matsui because he mows the Dodgers down. And I'm just like, okay, well, most Padres fans don't like Yuki Matsui for a drastically different reason. So I think a lot of it's perspective on us watching our team every single day.
In a vacuum.
Right? Yeah. I mean, like, we don't – I mean, if you're watching every single Padres game, it's hard to watch all these other teams play. And when you do, I mean, everybody's got relatively the same problems. But to me, I think it's different than 2023 in a sense that you see this team fight still.
All
like
the time.
They, like, if you go back to the Dodgers series, aside from the Monday – they did not roll over and die.
Correct.
I mean, you got Trenton Brooks out there hitting a two-run bomb, and all of a sudden they're chipping away, and they're within a couple of runs, yep. And they're, you know, they're looking at the end of the day going like, well, if we didn't screw around in the first three innings, we'd be good, right? And a couple of those games, you see the fight. Whereas in 2023,
it was over, dude.
You pull your head, you're pulling your hair out of your head, watching these guys wait for this big hit that they never got, and then they'd roll over and die after about three or four innings. And I think that's a major difference. And then the last time, I cannot get concerned until after Preller's done at the trade deadline because, yes, they don't have depth, but as we all know, regardless of how much prospect capital he may or may not have, there is a lot on the market this year if you look at the top 50 potential trade targets. And we do know in baseball, everybody's team August through the end of the year is drastically different than it is right now. So if we finish July and you look at a team and he makes like two moves and that's it, my concern level goes up a little bit more. But until then, I think you just got to let it play out and relax and enjoy the ride.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus, the next generation of advanced trading from Fidelity. Customize your tools and charts and access them seamlessly across desktop, web, and mobile. For faster trades anywhere you go, try the all-new Fidelity Trader Plus. Learn more about our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/traderplus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. All right, as long as we're on pitching, Ryan Burgert now on the injured list. There's a possibility he'll only miss one start. They keep saying it's just a bruise, and they may have even been doing a little roster manipulation to fix the bullpen. But they're definitely going to need someone, likely Monday against Philadelphia. Some of the options. A bullpen day. Matt Waldron, Kyle Hart, Omar Cruz, or Braden Nett. But, you know, Chris, any thoughts on what the Padres should do to fill the absence of Ryan Burgert in the short or medium term?
I know what I'd like to see them do. I'd like to see them get on their knees and beg Yu Darvish to pitch in a real game instead of a sim game. And we had a very good text or tweet yesterday from our friend Kirk Kenny of the San Diego Union-Tribune, who asked Scraby and I, does anybody know what Darvish's record is this year in sim games? And I had to laugh a little. He's pitched like, it seems to me, like six of these things, and bullpen sessions, and this, and 14 batters yesterday. It's driving me a little crazy. Is anybody else being driven crazy, or is it just me?
I'm not. The reason I'm not, because it just boils down to the fact that it's Yu Darvish. Like, I don't get the sense that Yu Darvish is out to screw the San Diego Padres. He just wants their money. When he was
last year.
Yeah, when last year he gave up his salary, when he had his personal issues, whatever those were. That didn't bother me. People have personal issues. It happens. I feel like if Yu Darvish could pitch, he would. I don't worry about it's an injury. Like, it's an injury, and there's something not right in him, and I think he's earned the right to say when he's ready. You know, I do, and I think, you know, that you look around baseball, there's a lot of starters on the IL, you know, and I'm sure they get questioned by their team and the fan base as well. I just don't see it in him. I don't see him as a guy that wouldn't be out there if he couldn't.
Well, I think he knows that if he goes, you know, four or five innings, but then can't pitch again in 4 or 5 days, he hurts the team more than he helps the team. It's not Shohei Ohtani. The Dodgers have an unbelievable advantage. If Yu Darvish could hit 50 home runs in bat first in the lineup, he'd be throwing an inning or two every 5 or 6 days like Ohtani is doing right now, and he could do his rehab at the big league level, but he can't. And it's a roster spot then. You're taking away from either a bullpen spot, yep, or you need another starter if that's the case. And if he's not ready, you can't really add him back to the 26-man roster. I will say, though, Chris, with now fewer options and him getting closer, it's not completely out of the question that we could see him next week. I think.
You didn't even have him on your list.
I didn't. We talked about him a little bit on our show, but I didn't put him on the list.
Because you want to see Kyle Hart when we're in Philly.
No, I want to see a bullpen day. I think it depends.
I don't. I want to see Yu Darvish.
I think it certainly depends on how they make it through the series in Cincinnati. But if they can get through those three games without taxing their bullpen, with an extra guy in Sean Reynolds now.
They haven't been able to do that in a month.
They haven't
been
able,
that's
Hoeing,
the thing. They haven't been able to do that.
Except for yesterday, really, prevented. You know, when's the last time they got through a series without taxing their bullpen? You know, and that's the concern, right?
If you're Mike Schilt and A.J. Preller and Ruben Niebla and you're looking at the next week of games, do they have to have a plan for Monday first?
I think you have contingency plans.
And then manage the weekend series accordingly? Or do they have to get through the weekend series and see what they have?
Or do they know exactly what they're doing right now?
Pavetta went 7 against the Nationals. Day off. If Cease can go deep, which has been a big if this year, but, you know, he's got it in him, you'll have 3 days of essentially a minimum, you know, 3 or 4 bullpen innings max. You should be well set up.
You can answer all of these questions just by telling Darvish to face 14 batters in a real game
in Philly
on Monday instead of a sim game.
But then what?
Well, give him 4.5, 4 1/3 innings. That's what a lot of their starters give them anyway.
But can he come back then 5 days later?
I don't know. Let's find out. Let's go.
Starting pitcher again.
I'm the only one very frustrated by this.
No, you're not.
Although,
you're not.
I 100% agree with you, Woodsy. I don't think Darvish is the kind of guy that's collecting a paycheck, but I'm still getting a little impatient.
Yeah.
I think that's because he missed all of last year. I think it's because we haven't really seen Yu Darvish in a couple of years. And so maybe if he pitched last year.
He did pitch last year.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
I didn't even pitch
the full season, we would have a little bit of a different feeling. I think he's just, after he got the contract, he hasn't pitched much as much as we want him to.
I would rather have a bullpen day than a banged up Yu Darvish. The point is, again, that we've already brought up, but, you know, having guys go out there and gut games out is not always the best thing if at their percentage that they're at is not better than the alternative, right? I mean, I remember a game watching the Texans play the Patriots in the playoffs, and J.J. Watt came back before he should have, and he got absolutely torched the whole day, and it killed him for the rest of the game, and they got smoked by the Patriots because he wanted to show that he can gut it out, he's the guy.
I don't worry about that with Yu Darvish that much. He's a savvy veteran. He's got so many different
options. Like, he's going to know when he's ready. So And the thing is with Yu Darvish.
Disagree. I know when he's ready.
Yeah, Chris.
You know what you signed up for with Yu Darvish. This is how he is. He takes care of himself, and this is the stuff that he does, and that's why it's like when he's ready, he'll be ready, and we'll wait for it until he's here.
I mean, we really dealt with this. The absence was the same last year. The reasons were different, but the absence was the same. And we just never saw him until he had like a press conference in the dugout in August. And he's like, yeah, I'm coming back. I'm where, you know, this is where I'm at. And he came back and he pitched brilliantly in September and October.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have no reason to doubt Yu Darvish knows his body. He knows his routine. He knows the regimens that need to go to get him ready to pitch. So why would we start now?
Plus, he's in the dugout still. So, I mean, who knows what he's doing in terms of helping everybody else out, just being part of the
club. He came in cold last year and pitched really well.
Right.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. So how many eyebrows here were raised when Mike Schilt changed his lineup twice in 1 week? What's going on here? What do you make of the change first, you know, to put Jackson Merrill up to the second slot when he came back, but then all of a sudden switching Luis Arraez to the leadoff spot and dropping Fernando Tatis Jr. to the fourth spot. Anyone want to take this first?
Well, like, why are we? I mean,
it's just unusual.
It's unusual because it's Schilt, right? But again, when your offense is near the bottom, of every offensive category, maybe other than batting average, and I think even there they're 18. I mean, it's not great. Look, we were after him to switch it up, try to catch a spark, try to catch lightning in a bottle a little bit, and then he does it, and you won those two games. Now, the offensive output was not great, but you won those two games. I had no problem with it. I like it. I don't like, you know, and I don't like when I see the lanes. Like, we always talk about the lanes for relievers to come in. And there were a couple times this year when Schulte was asked about, hey, man, you have these lanes at the bottom that it's easy pickings for a left-hander to come in and just chew you guys up. And they did it. And I don't feel like those lanes are necessarily there anymore. I kind of like the moves. I don't know where Arise is best suited. Benny, we asked Dino Saris today. He said fifth. And, okay, I agree. I could agree with that. He doesn't use every scientific method, I think, to put that lineup out. I think there is a lot of feel there about when he runs out the lineups he does.
Paul, I think if this was Brian Snitker or Terry Francona or Rocco Baldelli, would we not really – they all change their lineups way more. It's just because it's Schilt. And he's so consistent with it that to do it twice in a week just made like,
Aaron Boone had like 155 lineups in 162 games. Like, it's just the way baseball is nowadays. So I guess we're just not used to seeing it here in San Diego. I would just have to assume that there were a lot of conversations happening, and we all kind of agreed this morning when we talked about it that it sounds like it was something to try to get Luis Arraez going. Like,
that's what I thought.
You're confident in Fernando, whether he's batting first, second, eighth, that he's going to be Fernando, and he's going to give you the same approach to the plate every single time. So if this is a way to get a Luis Arraez going, I mean, obviously it's only one game. He went 3-for-4. It worked out pretty well. Now, nobody else on the team could hit yesterday, which is another problem. But you got to, you know, I don't know that this team wins without Luis Arraez getting back to the Luis Arraez that we've come to know and appreciate over the last couple of years.
Yeah, Braden, the the analytics say that Luis Arraez probably should be batting lower in the order, but it's human nature. The Padres played their best baseball maybe like in franchise history in the second half of last year, and they did it with Luis Arraez in the leadoff spot. It was almost stubborn not to at least try it until halfway through the season. I think it was game, 80, that they finally tried Luis Arraez back in the leadoff spot.
I agree with you guys. I think they're trying to get him right. I mean, I think Mike is trying to get his core six, as Kevin Acey has coined it, right in certain ways, and moving different guys into different spots, because the reality is until the trade deadline where you add depth and make any moves, you knew going into the season those six were going to be – their success was going to be the team's success. And if they're not all hitting or firing all cylinders, or at least half of them, it's a problem for the Padres. So Luis Arraez off to one of his worst offensive starts in his career. I mean, still hitting over 280, which is super cool. But for Luis Arraez, that's like hitting 220. So whatever gets him right, I'm cool with. I mean, and here's the thing. And, you know, Woods and I agree on the lineup of Fernando and Merrill and Manny and Arise. Honestly, those four guys just need to be in the top four spots, and you're probably going to have success. Yeah. I don't really care which way he does it.
Agreed.
Don't necessarily know if I want Manny batting leadoff ever, but you know what? If you want to mix it up to try to get guys hot, sounds good. This is the time to do it.
You saw it kind of fall apart in the playoffs last year a little bit with the offense, and you know, Schilt did not make a move. Gonna run it out there again. And that's, you have to be, I actually like to see a little flexibility from the skipper letting me know, hey man, if this isn't getting the job done, we might have to switch it up a little bit. So, I'm cool with it. I don't, you know, it doesn't, for years, all I heard was we need a consistent lineup. Yes. We gotta have a consistent lineup. And
then you have a
God
consistent
sakes,
lineup.
God sakes, they had a consistent lineup and they didn't do anything. And everyone's like, why are you switching the lineup? Like, everyone needs to figure it out. Figure out what you want.
Why is Andy Green switching the lineup every day? They can't get used to their spot.
The guy's uncomfortable. He's hitting three, and the next day he's hitting four, and these guys, they can't get right.
Approach changes.
Then he runs out the same lineup for 79 games, and everyone's like, what is he doing?
Come on, man, you gotta keep it fresh. These guys have open minds.
Is he asleep? What's he doing?
Yeah, the moral of the story is fans and radio host will find something to complain about no matter what, which means Mike Schilt knows he can never win. Totally,
we're not all fortunate enough to throw three MVPs at the top and just say, all right, the rest of you guys better get your ass together and we'll figure it out. But I don't mind the jigger of the lineup. I don't mind when he does it every day. I really wouldn't. It doesn't bother me. The guys in the lineup they have to produce, period. They just, it, you know, Tatis needs to play like the superstar he is. Manny needs to play like the superstar he is. Xander was coming around. I'm so bummed to see him get hurt. Luis Arraez needs to play like the superstar he is capable of being. Gavin Sheets is like a revelation. So I don't need him to be a superstar. I need him to just stay as consistent as possible. You know, crony, stay consistent, right? But those superstars have to superstar, or we're going nowhere, matter where they hit.
I think a little bit of this, I agree with, in general, with everything that you guys are talking about. But what I said earlier, the fact that they keep winning these games that we think they kind of have to win, might be masking a bigger issue. This is the issue I'm honestly referring to. They aren't hitting, and they haven't hit, and it's pretty clear now to me that they are admitting this finally to themselves, and so they've changed the lineup twice. I don't think it matters where they hit, and I don't care which one they do ultimately choose, as long as they find something that starts to work. And if they don't find something that starts to work, they're going to be in a load of trouble. I feel, and I think they know it. So I think that's where this lineup change is all coming from.
I will add that Eno thought that Xander Bogaerts or even Jake Cronenworth would be legitimate options to top the order and then follow that up with guys like Manny, Tatis, Merrill, and Arraez in the next four. Matt?
See, I don't think it's crazy to put Xander at the top, because if Xander gets on base, he can walk, and when he gets on base, he steals bases.
He puts together some pretty good at bats. He runs up some pitch counts.
His ABs lately have been outstanding.
I wouldn't mind to see him at the top spot, because when he gets on base, he could run the bases. Luis Arraez gets on base. I've seen it a couple times the last few weeks.
First game, Xander goes 0-for-4.
I don't
They're
care.
They're going to blow up your chat, you're going to start.
Say, what a change in tone in like 2 weeks.
I said this like 3 weeks ago when we were talking.
Yeah, you were there.
Hey, he steals a lot of bags.
I did get caught finally. 13 out of 14 now. But anyway, that's the lineup. Now, since we've last roundtable 2 weeks ago, Padres have played 7 games against the Dodgers, going, of course, 2-5. But they were all close, except for the one that the Padres blew out the Dodgers. So at this point, those two teams, any potential playoff run likely goes through L.A. How do you compare the two rosters and where the Padres would need to get better if they want to get past the Dodgers, Paulie, in the playoffs in October?
It's hard to say. I mean, the next time we see them, we could have a completely different roster.
They can too.
And they can too.
They're about to be very active, they say.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's so hard. I mean, yeah, I agree. They played them tough. Every game took a week off my life. Yeah. It was 7 straight playoff atmosphere type games. And you can't be happy with 2-5, but I don't know how it's going to be any different. You got to wait and see. You have no idea what this roster is going to look like. Obviously, they got to be able to hit better. They've got to be able to limit the Dodgers offensively, and I think they do a pretty good job of that. This pitching staff, I'd have to look at all their numbers, all their splits against the Dodgers. It feels like everybody on this rotation or on the pitching staff steps up for those guys.
Well, but they beat you with Páez, and they beat you with Will Smith, and they beat Tommy you Edmund. With Tommy Edman, right. They beat you with Teoscar.
And that's a Padres problem that we see
that's really
pretty often right now, is the bottom. You're letting bottom of the lineups for not just the Dodgers, other teams. You're like, oh,
Nationals,
that's what it's like.
Us.
Yeah, that's what it's like to get production from your 7, 8, and 9. So
no
I guess
doubt.
If they can figure out a way to get production out of 7, 8, 9, that would be a drastic improvement the next time they face the Dodgers. And do we face them again 6 times?
Instead of Arizona between, it's San Francisco.
Yeah, but it's that back-to-back in the middle August, of a 26-some
and that's
game
it.
Stretch.
You know, 2 agonizing
weeks. 6 more or
weeks?
7?
6 more. 2 agonizing weeks in the middle of the season, and that's it against
the
Dodgers.
But again, we handled them last year, Ben, in the regular season. Handled them. And handled them in a couple games in the playoffs. We were right there. So, what scares you is Glasnow, Snell, Sasaki coming back. It also scares you when you hear they are in the market for a frontline starter, a back-end guy like a Pete Fairbanks or an Emmanuel Clase. That's what scares you. They have the chips to get it done, to overpay. They have so many good prospects. They have so much money they can afford to make a mistake if it doesn't work out. They're the bully. And sometimes the bullied beats up his bully, and that's what you're going to have to do. But regular season really means nothing. Like, we saw how we handled them last year in the regular season, finally, and it was great. We all had a fun time covering it. But, man, when you got to the playoffs, they won out.
I'd say whether the Dodgers acquire new pitchers or just get back the pitchers they already have, they're always going to be tough to score against. The Padres are always going to have a tough time scoring. We know that for sure. What I was encouraged by was how well they handled the top three guys in the order.
Yep.
Consistently over those seven games. Now, you have to find a way to stop Tommy Edmund, as Paulie said.
Haesung Kim getting on in front of Otani.
You have
right?
to find a way to stop those guys from hurting you, Chris, if you want to have a chance against the Dodgers. But I legitimately think they do, simply because they do handle the guys at the top and have handled them pretty well across the board on their pitching staff, including, apparently, Yuki Matsui, the Dodger killer that we didn't even know that we had.
Well, here's the thing. Yes, they did an amazing job against the top three. The statistics bore that out. I don't think any of the three hit a home run in the seven games. So, but are you going to play with that fire again? I mean, that's unlikely. There's two things that stood out to me in the Dodgers series. One, I expected. The other, I didn't. One is the bottom of the Dodger lineup is 10 times better than ours.
At least.
And they showed it. Okay, we've already kind of kicked that around. The part that concerned me was that, as we said, they were all close games, which means they were either tied or one run, fifth, sixth inning. But the Dodgers won them all. Why? Their bullpen shut us down. Our bullpen did not shut them down. That is where we have to make sure we have an advantage if we're going to beat the Dodgers.
No doubt. Adrian Morahone is really kind of your secret weapon to get those guys. They have lanes where Morahone can absolutely thrive. And, you know, they have to do a I don't want to say a better job, but they have to do a better job at figuring out who to deploy and when. And it's not easy. It is almost impossible against a lineup that deep. And then, you know, they got guys coming off the bench that are better than guys that we're running out there to start. So they're a tough team.
Yeah, they employ their lefties. We talked about the lanes earlier really well. Yeah. Vessia used to be a guy, you know, Jay Cronenworth with the big hit in the playoffs. They seem to get Vessia all the time. Now they can't touch Vessia. And that's concerning.
Anthony Bonda,
nasty. And, you know, they're going to get back, you know, likely.
Tanner Scott is locked
Kirby
in.
Kirby Yates they couldn't touch.
Right.
The Padres' lack of success against that bullpen is absolutely a concern.
Well, because Benny,
Braden, if it's going to be a close game,
it is. I mean, but at the same time, we talked about all the games being close. What loses close games? The little things and little plays here and there, and that's where the Padres, I think, lost all those games in those series. I mean, you could go back to the Lockridge misread in extra innings in Game One. You could go back to, and it didn't completely kill them, but Morahone threw the ball in the dirt when you needed a big out on Otani. And there were so many of those that the Padres made more mistakes than the Dodgers did. And this is a Dodgers team that defensively is not good.
Not good at all.
They are, I mean, you flip them on and they're playing the Rockies. They look like a circus in the and they look like a circus even in some of those games. I mean,
sometimes.
That late inning comeback with Kopech, who is just an absolute zoo, throws the ball to the back of the backstop. It kicks up the first baseline. Padres advance, and you know what? The Padres against the Dodgers, and the thing that what has beaten the Dodgers in the postseason every single year, it's been pressure. When they have pressure to have to go out there and win. Last year, they actually handled it for the first time in a long time. But every playoff, they couldn't handle the pressure when they go through an entire season just destroying everybody, playing loose, playing free, and then they get to the postseason against the St. Louis Cardinals. Matt Carpenter goes deep on Kershaw early, and all of a sudden it's like, man, we got to go play.
You got to hit him early.
So you have to, as Jackson Merrill said at the beginning of the year, you have to apply pressure on them and make them have to play stressed. Because when the bottom of the order is not stressed, Edmund, Páez, all those guys, and they just like, I just go out there and freely hit, they're going to destroy you doing that. But with pressure, I don't care who you are. It's hard to play with pressure. And even the best of the athletes that go to the Hall of Fame have a problem with that. So you can't make a ton of mistakes. You got to take care of the little things, and you have to keep applying pressure on the Dodgers. And that's the recipe for success, which is very difficult to do in a postseason.
Well, at this point, Benny, you want them winning. You want them winning.
Yes.
They're 19 games over 500 right now, something like that. Great. We all said that they were going to do this. No one. We all said at the beginning of the year these guys are going to be a juggernaut. Great. Go win.
Let them coast.
Let them get that.
Even when they started slow, we're like, just
yeah, relax.
It'll be fine.
Go let them get that first round bye, and let them sit and let them wait. And let a hungry team come in, whether it's us, whether it's somebody else.
Let them go beat up all the National League.
Let them, exactly. Like, that's how you beat that team.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus. With customizable tools and charts you can access across all your devices. Try our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/trader plus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Vanished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
What Braden said, just I want to follow up quickly. Chris, he was right. Padres made some mistakes in that series. But I would die on the hill. I don't think the Padres are a sloppy baseball
team. No, I wouldn't
either. They're a pretty sharp baseball team, but when they play the Dodgers, at least they haven't looked their best, and the Dodgers did look a little sharper for sure.
You know, and maybe it's coming off the end of a 26 game, but they looked sloppy yesterday. There's some slop out there, missing hit and runs, getting thrown out at the plate, stuff like that.
But I agree with Ben though. They're not like a sloppy, you know, they're not like a sloppy team.
He sees that, and he won't ever tell us. But that's what gnaws at him the most. He hates when his team is sloppy
for sure,
and doesn't look like they're playing sharp. He'll make sure they're playing sharp, I think, in the second half of the season. He always does.
Yeah, you're going to make a mistake here and there. The Padres, by and large, are buttoned up better than I think most teams, and that's one of the reasons they are winning games despite being so low in the hitting and some of the other categories.
Like getting a run against the Nationals with the bases loaded and they don't turn a play at home plate when they should have.
That cost them a game. Yeah. But I just think what you said is right. If the Padres can't figure out a way. Gesundheit.
Thank you.
Can't figure out a way to get a hit off Anthony Banda or Jack Dreyer or Alex Vesia, and don't even let them bring back Blake Treinen, Yates, Scott. These bullpen guys, they shut them down here in the recent seven games. But how many runs did the Padres play off last year?
Yep.
Zero. The game that killed the Padres was a bullpen game.
Well, so strap in if you face him again in October.
You've got to find a way to hit these guys.
You know exactly what Dave Roberts is going to do.
Yes, he's
going to
keep doing it.
He's going to keep doing what he's doing now. And if you get a 6-0 lead or an 8-0 lead in the playoffs, it doesn't matter. You know who he's bringing in. He's bringing in Kike Hernandez. He is willing to punt games to keep his bullpen arms fresh so that they can go out and smoke you the next day, which is exactly what they did. And that's what they're doing this regular season.
Won them a World Series. It's our San Diego Padres Roundtable brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. And we've gotten to the seventh inning stretch, guys. It is summertime officially. We are into the baseball's best season here. The question today, Matt Scraby, what's your favorite summer barbecue item? And that could be a main dish, a grill item, a side dish, or a dessert.
Ooh, man. Round table pizza, of course.
Yes. First and foremost, round table pizza.
If you can't have a round table, yes. What would it be?
Thank you for asking. Thank you for letting me off the hook. I think I'm just going to go like super boring American and go hot dogs and hamburgers type of thing.
Burgers and dogs.
Like a 4th of July barbecue type.
Yes.
That's what I would choose.
All right. Woodsy, I think you're more of a side dish guy, aren't you?
Potato salad.
Yeah, I know.
Give me a trough of a trough full of potato salad.
Regular, like the kind of creamy one or the German kind of more.
I like a little bit of a mix, actually. Yeah, like a little bit mustardy, but not super mustardy. I like pickles and eggs and onions and
I had a Redskin potato salad at Goat Hill over the weekend. And then I crumbled some potato chips into it,
It
was divine.
Yeah, delicious.
It was so good.
Love
it. It was really, really good.
You mean you put potatoes with potatoes and it tasted good?
It really, but that's crunchy potatoes surprising. With soft potatoes. Polly, barbecue, favorite menu item?
Main dish, I love barbecuing chicken breasts.
Mm-hmm.
But I think my favorite for the summer options, it doesn't have to be a summer option, but I tend to eat it more in the summer, is corn. I love corn.
Corn on the cob.
Or corn as a side. It is elite. I love it so much.
Lots of butter, dripping off the sides.
Like I think of a barbecue happening, and I'm excited for corn. Potato salad, corn,
some watermelon chunks.
Yes.
But, yeah.
It's a perfect day.
100%. Braden, barbecue item? You got a smoker, right?
I do. I'm smoking meat constantly. But
save that clip.
It's great. Always smoking meat. Always taking pictures of my smoked meat.
Don't say it again and again and again.
Paulie only needs it once.
Yeah, just once.
I've learned this over the years.
I heard Ben was a good knife sharpener. You want to come over and sharpen my knives, Ben, for me? Definitely brisket. I mean, I like doing brisket. The thing about, you know, for me with barbecue, I like the whole process of a cook and setting it up and the day before and prepping it. And, you know, we got a meat grinder now, so it's easy. I could trim extra stuff off of it and then save it for other things. But long smokes are great, and the best thing to long smoke is a brisket, so brisket.
Chris, Horia Tiki Bowl for you?
Well, at the ballpark, yeah. Yes. Well, I'm going to quote the legendary movie character, and I believe his name was Fat Bastard. And I believe he sang, I want my baby back, ribs.
Ooh,
and
good
baby
call.
Back, ribs. I got to go
had
ribs.
Those a couple weekends ago.
Ribs are my all-time favorite.
St. Louis or back?
Well, I'm singing baby back ribs, but I do think my favorite is just a big, fat beef rib. Just huge rib.
Save that
you can gnaw on for
gnaw on it
like 20 minutes.
So many
how much you gnaw on your ribs there, Woods? Enough?
Enough.
Can you smoke me a rib?
I'll smoke you some meat, Chris, as long as Ben sharpens my knife.
All right, since none of you went the dessert route, a tray of peach cobbler where you get to serve yourself and then scoop some ice cream on top of that. Oh, I love that.
I would go cherry pie if that's the case.
Cherry pie is good, too.
Peach cobbler,
I love that.
I have smoked an apple pie or two in my time.
All right, speaking of summer, Padres are in hot and sticky Cincinnati. To play a club that is now looking like a potential wild card contender, especially now with the addition of young phenom Chase Burns. Now that we're virtually halfway through the season, how do you guys evaluate the playoff chase in the National League with teams like the Reds, the Cardinals, Giants, Phillies, Diamondbacks? Did I say Cardinals? Yeah, I think I already did. Chris, I mean, I think there's seven teams separated by only about four games at this point.
Ten teams in the National League are over .500. So I would say all 10 of those have to be considered. And, you know, I'm not totally ready to count the Braves out, but they're not one of those 10. You're going to have to play well. I mean, I think I'm just looking at it from the Padres' perspective because I don't know which of these 10 are going to emerge. It seems to me that the Brewers are living a little on borrowed time, maybe more than some of the others, but they've proven everybody wrong before. Padres are going to be either 44-37 at the break or at the halfway, or if they win tomorrow, they'll be 45-36. Either way, what's that? 89, 90 wins. I think that 90 is going to be almost necessary with so many teams in contention. You know, the Padres better bring it in the second half and go at least 45-36 again. That's all I'll say about the playoff thing.
Matt, your take on the playoff race. And you know, Chris is right. I think 90 is a good target. Now, the good news is the Padres only really played well for 3 weeks in the first half, and they were able to get on pace for 90 wins. So if you can just find another stretch where you play well, match what you did in the first half, you should be in okay shape at the end of the season.
I guess I have a small soft spot for the Reds in my heart because I lived there for a little bit, but they're dangerous, and if they could play good baseball, they could beat some teams. Now, do they play good baseball all the time? No, they don't. Ellie De La Cruz is great. He's also terrible at the same time on defense.
He's great and he's terrible.
I mean, did you see Chris and I went over yesterday when he didn't look home when the guy tagged up or missed the base, whatever. I think the Padres, and I said this a few weeks ago, I think the Padres play their best when their back is up against the wall. And their back is not up against the wall right now. They still got plenty of time in this season. Their second half is usually where they're their best outside of 2023 or 2021. But, yeah, 2021. They play better when they know things are on the line. And now we're getting into that part of the season. So I think they're going to play better. I am a little worried about some of those fringe teams, though, sneaking in and stealing one of those
wild card
spots.
There's just so many of them now. I mean, you can't necessarily identify which one.
Somebody's going to do it.
Someone's going to play well. There's no doubt about that. I think the Reds, Woodsy, one thing that worries me is Terry Francona.
100%
is their manager now.
And I had them in the playoffs. I had them in the playoffs. I had them making the playoffs this year. It was kind of my sleeper pick, and mostly because of Tito, to be honest. And I love the young talent that they have. Rich tradition of winning in that city. They want it back. They want it badly again. It's been a long time since the Big Red Machine, and then the days of Eric Davis and guys like that, and the Nasty Boys. But like. They are absolutely a scary team that can whip your ass up and down that 140-degree field that you're going to be playing on the next 3 days. So you really have to be careful. Dylan Cease needs to pitch his tail off tomorrow night. I don't know, man. I want to win one game at a time. I got to figure out a way to beat them tomorrow with Dylan Cease on the bump. You got a couple of tough lefties. They're throwing at you, Abbott and Lodolo. Pretty nasty. So they have a... They have a ton of talent. I mean, a ton of talent, and they have the right man at the helm. So, yeah, man, it's a big one.
Tell you, I one team I wish would go away is the Arizona Diamondbacks.
The Cardinals are for the team.
Corbin Carroll's injury should push them.
I thought Corbin Burns' injury was going to do that. They don't have any more Corbins to
lose. They're out of Corbins. Yeah. Patrick Corbin there? No, he's not.
No, he's not there anymore.
And I just feel like if they could go away, you could not breathe easily, but... Help. I don't like seeing them continue because they'll get Corbin Carroll back at some point. They're not getting Corbin Burns back, but they'll get Corbin Carroll back. And if they're anywhere in contention, they have the most dangerous offense certainly remaining in the National League wildcard race.
Here's the one thing that's a little concerning to me. You have a lot of people saying, well, last year, we're worried this year, but they're 8 games over .500, whereas last year they were under 500. Yeah. And a matter of fact, we're 50-50 after the first game in the All-Star break, and we did fine. Yes, that's true. But they also went 43-19 to finish the season. I don't think you can count on that happening again.
No.
So the fact that we are ahead of last year's pace is nice. But they got to stay ahead of last year's pace.
Yeah. You know, Mike Schilt obviously has a track record of good second halves. Yeah. Probably one thing I wanted to ask him is, you know, where do you see the improvement coming in the second half from this team? Because I don't necessarily easily identify. You know, I say we hit better, but I don't think that's what Mike Schilt talked about when he told us, hey, get better as the game goes on, as the series goes on, as the season goes on. You can't just say, hit better now. You know, there's no magic wand to hit better. You can get better as a team, more coordinated, better communication, sharper defense, but just hit better is not a wand that any manager has to wave on his team.
Well, I think I tweeted yesterday, I think it was Mike Petriello that tweeted it out, and he said, why isn't Dave Roberts pressing the same hit with runners in scoring position button that he did the first 2 months? And I looked at the Padres and I said, well, my God, we are like the most consistent team. It was like 254 with runners in scoring position, 248 and 251 or something since the season started. They've been consistently average at hitting with runners in scoring position. I think those numbers will jump up. I do, based on the fact that, you know, guys are healthy. The more ABs you get, all that stuff. I think it's gonna happen. Pitching wears down, but I they have been fairly consistent. Now, consistently bad or consistently average is still consistent. It's still consistent. So, yeah, man, I think, you know, the improvement can certainly come offensively. I don't know if Schilt's going to give you a clear answer on that. I mean, if he could press that button to have this team turn into an offensive juggernaut, I think he would have pressed it by
now. Yes, he wouldn't. He's not going to wait.
Let's wait.
Yeah.
Sometimes happens naturally, Paul, in the second half of the season. I mean, yeah, Petco Park heats up. Cincinnati's a great place to get your bats
going.
Great
place to hit. Yeah.
Jackson Merrill's fly ball that was caught at the warning. Probably about 6 balls that the Padres hit in this series against the Nationals are all 5 rows deep at the Great American Ballpark.
Yeah, it's too simple to say, like, offensive production. But I do think that guys are going to start playing with more of a sense of urgency in the second half. That's only natural. I mean, look, it's counterintuitive, and it feels weird to say it when the team has, what are they, 8 games above .500, and you're like, look, we're 3 months into the season now. 3 months out of a 6-month season, and they've been a bad offensive team for, like, two of those 3 months.
First 3 weeks were fun.
The first 3 weeks were great, and they set up
they set you up for so much success when you can have a rough couple of weeks. You're able to withstand that a lot easier when you go 13-3. So I think that they've been a pretty bad offensive team now for most of the season, where you can say, like, yeah, they're not a good offensive team. They have a good record, and they're getting the job done, but these 1-0 games, these 2-1 games, like, eventually guys are going to need to start going, and I think that'll just kind of naturally happen with a little bit more urgency, guys maybe taking an extra bag. Like, we got to be able to score without having to string along four hits every single time to get one run.
And need a first baseman to throw to the wrong base or not throw to the right base.
It's like a miracle to get a run sometimes.
It feels like a miracle sometimes.
They're playing OTL, trying to get a bunch of singles in a row.
And then, of course, the Giants have somehow gotten worse with Rafael Devers. I don't know if that's going to continue either, but will they still be around, hanging around the playoff race at the end of the season? I'm just not sure, but I think, Chris, you said it best. With so many teams in it, you can guarantee that one or two of them are going to play well, yeah, which means you have to at least keep up with those teams in the second half. So I think 90 has to be your kind of minimum target line if you want to make the playoffs in the National League this year.
I think if Mike Schilt can give us another, you know, something that resembles 43-19, then we have to honestly start thinking about the fact that he really does have some magic touch.
He does. Some second half second magic, half. Yeah, no doubt.
He did it with the Cardinals.
90 wins,
one year,
right?
What did they do with the Cardinals? It was insane that one year.
Last year was 15 games in a row, one of those years.
Yeah, if he does it again, we have to start, you know, thinking this isn't an accident.
Yeah.
So let's hope that happens.
All right, we're out of time. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, brought to you by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. It really is pizza royalty. Enjoy the holiday next week. We'll be off next Thursday. Matt, enjoy your burgers, potato salad.
Thank you.
Chicken breast, brisket.
Baby back
ribs and peach cobbler for the 4th of July. We'll talk to you soon. It's The Roundtable. Thanks for joining us here on 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.
Introducing Fidelity Trader Plus, the next generation of advanced trading from Fidelity. Customize your tools and charts and access them seamlessly across desktop, web, and mobile. For faster trades anywhere you go, try the all-new Fidelity Trader Plus. Learn more about our most powerful trading platform yet at fidelity.com/traderplus. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE, SIPC.
The results are in. Great conversations are always on par. So follow and listen to On Par with me, Maury Povich, wherever you get your podcasts.